FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's the day after Christmas, 12/26/18. Well, market is up a little bit today, but that long, unfavored, disfavored, barbarous relic gold has been making a rally. John, we're almost going to be ready to say, I told you so. If it continues another 2 weeks, we will be right on the money. Hey, as always, be a part of the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. And, well, you watch what's happened to the market. It's lost, it's cracked the crucial 22,000 mark, although it's back up a little bit today. There will be bounces, but this is taking on all the trappings of a bear market. And honestly, I'm a little surprised that it happened now, but not really. I knew it was going to happen. I thought we had months to go. But John, you've been short for quite a while, and now your short bets are paying off. And hey, Merry Christmas, and I guess it's Happy Wednesday.
Yeah, happy holidays, Kerry. Yeah. You know, there's a point at which when you're early, but you're so early that you can't take any credit for what happens eventually. And that's been the case for me, definitely. I've been shorting stuff for like 3 years now and buying gold stocks for that whole time. And nothing has worked until October. So it's nice to make back some of those losses, but there's no way to take any kind of credit for this stuff happening. Because, you know, if you're way too early, then you just become a stop clock. And that's the case this time. And you know what? That's been the story of my life. I've been involved in bubbles literally since the 1970s when I first discovered gold and silver, and they went through the roof not long after that. And every single time, I've been too early, you know, right eventually, but a couple of years too early. And, you know, you'd think that that I would learn by now to wait for these things to play out. But
what's that old saying? The market can stay irrational a lot longer than you can stay liquid.
And that is so true. Yeah, you know, once markets get irrational, they tend to stay that way. In other words, trends continue for a long time. And if you, you know, if you're temperamentally a contrarian and you want to go counter to trends, that's where you're most comfortable, you still have to recognize that trends tend to go on longer than they ought to. Because once people get an idea in their head, it takes a lot of contrary evidence to change their minds. So once a trend gets going, it tends to have momentum of its own and go on for sometimes years longer than all the fundamentals say should be possible. And this was just another one. You know, stocks were overvalued 3 years ago by historical measures. Mm-hmm. And then they were wildly overvalued a year ago, and yet they continued to go up. Now they're dropping. And if this proceeds like a normal bear market, you want to ride your shorts for a while. You know, you don't want to take profits right now, although I kind of say I'm kind of doing that with some some short positions. But there's a capitulation at the end of the process that you really want to participate in, because that's when you get the last 50% drop in a lot of these things. And in some cases, drops all the way to zero, because a lot of the high-flying stocks right now may not survive. The coming recession, if it plays out according to the 2008-2009 script. You know, the only reason the big banks still exist is because the government bailed them out at the very bottom. But otherwise, you would have seen Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo all disappear. You could have ridden them to zero, barring the big bailout. So, you know, the question now is, at what point does the government step back in and try to stop this? And Trump would like to be now. He would like
yesterday.
The Fed to start cutting interest rates yesterday.
2 weeks ago.
And we'll see when they do start.
Hey, well, you know, there's a maxim on Wall Street, which is it's the worst thing that can happen to you is to be right at the wrong time. You could be wrong at the right time, or you could be wrong at the wrong time, but being, you know, wrong right at the wrong time could be really hazardous to your wealth. So the fact that it's happened is no surprise. You know, the thing is, I'll take one issue, because we have to go back to the bank bailout of 08-09. Wells Fargo got a $25 billion bailout. Citi, Chase, all of the others got 45. Wells Fargo didn't even want the bailout. They didn't need it at that particular moment, but they were forced to take it because the Fed believed and the Treasury believed that if they didn't take the bailout, if they were the only big bank not to take the bailout, there would be a mass transfer of money from all the banks that did take the bailout to Wells Fargo. They weren't like terribly, terribly exposed. They were exposed, but not to the point of like a Citibank or Bear Stearns or all the others that were just using the alchemy of interest rate arbitrage and securitization to line their pockets. So it's important to realize that. But now Wells is the largest bank in the country, and certainly they've had their problems lately, and they may just be susceptible to what's going to happen. We don't know yet, because we could see Europe really taking the lead in this crisis, and then all sorts of money just flows from the euro into the dollar, driving the dollar higher and protecting, at least for the time being, the big money center banks. So this is all like uncharted territory, because we screwed up. We would have been better off had we just allowed those banks to fail, protected the depositors, just wipe out the creditors, and kind of start over again. We had an opportunity to do it, but we really blew it. And I'm talking about our leadership. You and I believed from the get-go, let these guys fail and protect the depositors, which should be the hallmark of stability for any monetary system. But then we've got this thing called the bail-in. I don't think that the U.S. population will accept the bail-in, that they will put up with that. So that means there's only one alternative if the banks go south. And you know what that is.
What is it, Kerry?
Bailing them out again, doing the same mistake, rewarding the same bad behavior as we did last time, and watching the same thing happen, right? Except this time, the system is much weaker than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. You know, the big question this time around, I mean, there's no doubt that in the next recession, there's going to be a lot of pressure to bail out everybody in sight, and that they'll probably succumb to that pressure. But the big question is whether it'll succeed or not, because there's a limit to how much new currency you can create and how much of the private sector you can socialize before the system just stops being what it was. It stops being a wealth generation machine and just starts being a government slush fund. You know, in other words, we become a banana republic, and then all this, you know, all these ideas about stocks having certain value and your currency being worth a certain amount, you know, none of that matters anymore in a banana republic, because the system is controlled not for wealth creation, but for the perpetuation of the people in charge. So then you get, you know, the crack-up boom that we've talked about so many times, you and I, where nobody wants to hold the currency anymore. And you get a situation like Argentina or Venezuela, where everybody is pouring whatever capital they have into real assets and getting out of the currency, and then it just falls apart. They lose the ability, the central bank loses the ability to manipulate markets. And so I think the big question is this the time? Is the next recession and the ongoing bear market the time when we finally figure out that, you know, the game has an end to it and that we've reached that end and we decide to do something else? And that's, you know, that's paradise for precious metals. It's great for farmland, great for high quality energy assets, and terrible for bank stocks and
paper,
most
paper
kinds of government bonds, you know. So it would be interesting. I mean, not interesting, except in the old Chinese curse.
Interesting, but, from an intellectual.
It'd be fun to watch for gold bugs if that happens.
From an intellectual standpoint, it is going to be very interesting. Because look, the winners write the history. They won the last time, so gold is garbage. But this time, you know, they might not be the winners, the banking cartel. And if that happens, then hey, your listenership, my listenership, and look, we're not praying on for hard times ahead. We're not praying for bad times for the masses. This is just a foregone conclusion from the irresponsible behavior of our financial leadership and our political leadership. And it was bound to happen. Look, we talked, John, we've been at this 7 years now. How many times do we talk about how the debt's going up and up and that no problem has been solved? And here we are now. And, you know, I think Trump was crazy to be taking credit for the stock market to rise, because what goes up can come down. Other thing is, I started looking at individual stocks, John, that prospered in this market, particularly Amazon. And when you look at Amazon stock, it is a classic bubble formation. And I think the air has been let out of the bubble for Amazon. And who knows, you know, when we get all said and done, Jeff Bezos might only be worth $5 or $15 billion. He isn't going to be worth $150 billion when this thing runs its course, John.
Well, that's the thing about bubbles is you get a lot of good companies that are valued insanely. You know, they're still good companies. Amazon is a totally legitimate business model that has a bright future, probably. But you could make the case that it's worth, you know, in hard times, it's worth one third what it is today.
Yeah,
and it's already halfway to that.
That's a good case. And I think, honestly, they've never made the profits that an Apple has made or a Google. Google and Apple are real companies. Amazon, its wealth has been created in the stock market, not in profits that get distributed to shareholders or reinvested in the business. Yeah, I know they manipulate their profits, but they're nowhere near as profitable fundamentally as Apple or Google, or Facebook for that matter. Not a company that I really like, but Facebook was immensely profitable. Tens of billions of dollars these companies have generated over the past decade, John. Amazon hasn't done that. They've got a great model. You know, they're great at delivering stuff. They're great at customer service fulfillment. And that might be a good thing, but they're still just an online department store when you get down to it. And, you know, if consumerism really takes a hit, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be here. How bad do you think this thing is going to get? Is really the question, one which neither you nor I can really answer, but we have to try to take a stab at it. Is this financial Armageddon, or is it just it's another recession and we'll make it through fine?
Well, the end of the financial world as we know it is coming because the system doesn't work. It requires increasing amounts of debt to maintain the status quo. And that's, you know, that's the heroin addict model there, where you you need bigger and bigger doses in order to stave off withdrawal. And eventually you hit a fatal dose. So in terms of debt, that's what we're heading for. At some point, there's going to be so much debt in the system that the system breaks down. But whether this is the time or not, we'll only know that in retrospect. I mean, I thought 2006 was the end of this game.
We both did.
And it took till 2008 to really break down. And then it almost fell apart, but it didn't. You know, we were able to liquefy the system by creating huge amounts of new currency, taking on immense amounts of new debt, and buy ourselves another decade. But the cost was such that maybe the next time we can't do that. Because, you know, is if $10 trillion saves you, will $20 trillion of new debt save you the next time around? Or is there a limit to the amount of new debt you can take on? And that's what we'll find out.
Yeah.
When the system breaks down, it's probably going to be in the currency markets where it happens. In other words, we'll lose faith in these fiat currencies, and then governments won't have their tools to manipulate markets anymore. And that's the end of the game. Whether this time is it, who knows? You know, but yeah.
I would just add that it'll be the currency and sovereign debt markets where people just don't want to touch the stuff. It'll be toxic and you'll just dump it. And one other thing, as far as the system not working, ideally, capitalist, competitive, free market system, every entrepreneur, you know, comes out with a new innovation and eventually their rate of return is drastically reduced. It's just the way the system is supposed to work. So you don't have these monopoly or oligopoly situations. But in fact, here, what we've got is the people who behave the worst, who take the worst risks and are the most reckless, are the ones who are most rewarded, the banks. And the banks are in that position because of the government and because they're a favored constituency of our government, of our system, because they have the right. They've got a monopoly to create money out of thin air. And when things go bad, they get bailed out by the Fed or the government or both. So this system is really a major failure. The fact that any sector has been able to grow under the current system besides the financial system is pretty downright remarkable and is a kind of testament to human nature to get around this stuff. But you know, the system is broke, and like you said, how much longer can it go on?
Well, concentration of corporate power is another aspect to the story, because at the same time we were bailing out everybody in sight, we allowed big companies to become even bigger and to, you know, dominate entire industries. We've got, six media companies controlling 90% of the media. Correct. A handful of drug companies control most of the world's pharmaceuticals. It goes on and on. And, you know, a handful of big banks obviously control most of the banking system. And because of that concentration of power, they're able to control the parts of the government that are relevant to them. So, you know, they call this regulatory capture in economics.
Yeah, sure.
Where the big companies that are being regulated actually take control of the regulatory apparatus. And in that way, they control their own environment and they use it to make themselves even bigger and more powerful and less
competition. Get rid of competition. That's what they've been masterful at doing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's these rentier seekers, right? Rent-seeking companies. They don't produce anything for the economy. They contribute nothing. I mean, arguably, the banks do employ way too many people. But other than giving people a place to put their butts from 9 to 5 and, you know, pumping up asset prices, what do these banks really contribute? They don't make business loans anymore. They don't do anything. And you see the shadow banking system in China, in the U.S., and all over the world rising as an antidote to these rent seekers who are really parasitic enterprises who contribute nothing to the economy. They only take. They're great at taking. And you just have to look and see the way the big money center banks, you know, JP Morgan Chase, when I first looked at them back in 08, 09, supposedly had like a book value of $120 billion. It must be 3 or 4 times that now. I haven't looked because it's kind of a meaningless number because you don't know what they're really worth at all, other than their brand. What are they worth? Probably nothing, or getting close to nothing at this point. But that's our problem. And concentration, the government has been a prime aider and abettor of concentration in these industries because the government likes it. The fewer companies there are to collect taxes from, to regulate, the easier their job is. So the government's been part and parcel, a partner in seeking to concentrate. And look, Trump tried to stop the merger of AT&T and Time Warner, which we could argue about that, but he couldn't stop it. They wound up merging. So now they're that much more powerful. And, you know, like you said, it's like that in so many other industries, drugs, media, auto keeps getting smaller, more concentrated. You go down the list of industry, steel, there's only a couple of them. Aluminum, there's a few of them. And then there's minor producers and everything that you look at, computers, you know. Yeah, there's like five companies that basically do everything. Microprocessors, another example. Everything is way too concentrated, and that's only worked to the detriment of the economy, but the government loves it.
Well, this is a great example of the cyclicality of human history, because we went through this in the 1920s, where a handful of companies grew up to control the most important industries in the U.S. Then we had the Great Depression. These big companies got blamed for it, in part, and we enacted antitrust laws. You know, we broke up the big banks and separated investment banking from commercial banking, and we made the oil companies divide themselves up into multiple smaller oil companies. And that worked for quite a while, but we forgot the lessons of the 1920s.
Yeah, well.
And we're doomed to repeat the process now. In the next big crisis, whenever it comes, in whatever form it takes, one of the culprits will be, at least be perceived to be, the big companies that control everything, and we'll reenact antitrust laws. You know, we'll break these guys up, and that'll be a good thing. I'm temperamentally libertarian, and that's usually the framework in which
both
I view everything.
Both of us.
But I'm a libertarian with antitrust as the centerpiece of it. You know, I don't think you can have true free markets and real competition if extreme concentrations of power are allowed to evolve in the private sector. You know, it's not just the public sector that's a threat if it concentrates too much power within itself. Companies can do the same thing. They can form oligopolies, which hamstring competition. So you need... ironically, you need the public sector to have the power to limit concentrations of power in the private sector. So you have to have antitrust laws. And by their nature, they have to be kind of arbitrary. In other words, you just have to name a number for bank assets and say, no bank can have more assets than this. And, you know, the banks will squeal about how, why is it this number and not $10 billion more?
How will we compete?
Don't you realize the economies of scale we're passing up?
Yeah, we can't compete because Chinese banks are worth $10 trillion and we're only worth $1 trillion. And, you know, it's just not fair. Anytime you talk, you hear about big companies talking about fairness. Hey, perfect example, like you said, you know, airlines, another example where concentration's gotten out of hand and we're all screwed. We're all treated like dirt on these airlines. And when one of them says, you know, I think I'll give out a free soda and a free bag of chips for lunch, everyone rejoices because, oh, they're treating us like human beings. And maybe we'll even clean the planes once in a while, give them a nice clean so you're not sitting in filth. And, you know, it's just an oil, perfect example. ExxonMobil, you know, all of these companies that have been acquired, the big companies, BP acquired Atlantic Richfield, and half a dozen large oil companies, telecommunications, not that we have a telecommunications industry anymore. It's more like it's big data now. And then, you know, to add insult to injury, John, they monitor all of our data, all of our interactions on the internet, and use that against us to sell us products, to sell you products that you probably could easily live without and you don't really want. And it's just been turned, and you know what? Yellow vests in Paris, in England, they've spread all over. Even in the Islamic countries, they're fed up. They've had enough. And I think we're reaching the end of this here, John.
Yeah, well, okay, two things about that, Kerry. One is that one of the real intellectual challenges of the next cycle is going to be how to apply antitrust to new media. In other words, how do you decide what Facebook's market share is? You know, what is the market share even of social media? And how do you decide how to limit the growth of any one company in social media? You know, that'll be interesting. Again, it'll be arbitrary. We'll just come up with a number and just impose it, and that'll be that. But about civil unrest around the world, people are dissatisfied pretty much everywhere for different reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of different issues, which divides us on the right to left spectrum in a lot of cases. You know, on the right, we're upset about excessive immigration and excessive maybe government. Excessive taxation. And on the left, the lack of a social safety net and corporate concentration. And the interesting part of this will be when people on both the right and the left perceive that they have a shared interest in remaking the current system. And they start forming coalitions that stretch from Bernie Sanders all the way out to Marine Le Pen or somebody like that. And that's going to be a really powerful political force. But it's going to take the next crisis to bring that about. Because right now people are focused on their little issues, you know, their individual issues.
Correct.
In a context of a world that basically kind of sort of works, but they're mad about one thing or another thing. But once the world breaks and it doesn't work anymore, that's when you see some really interesting political coalitions form. And that's when we have the big debate about whether private property is something we want to continue with, and whether limited government is the right way to go or unlimited government that controls everything. You know, that, and it's not clear that the libertarian side of this argument wins at all, but it's an argument that we're going to have, and we kind of need to be prepared for it, because if there's a chance of coming out on the limited government, individual freedom, private property, contract law side of the debate, that's what we have to go for.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing the beginnings of that. Look, we've seen 10 states now legalize recreational marijuana. And that's an issue that really is on both sides. It's not really a party issue. Yeah, like some of the hardcore right are against it, but for the most part, everyone is for it. We saw them just pass a sentencing criminal justice reform act because we've got like 80% of the world's inmates in our prisons. That's a reaction. You know, things are always darkest before the light, John, to paraphrase a saying. And I think we're getting to that point now where it's getting dark, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because what divides us mostly is artificial, created by the powers that be to keep us divided. Because as long as the people are divided, then they can have their way with us. They can do what they please, and there's nothing we can do to stop them. Anyways, we got to wrap it up now, but the headline of this edition is John Rubino was right.
No, Carrie, don't do that.
Well, right among other things. Right about that the system was never fixed in 08 and 09, and that the problem would come back in spades, and that I could say we were right. It just was a matter of time, which we've always said from the get-go. We didn't know when it was going to happen, but we knew what was going to happen at some point in the future, right?
Well, if you're going to say we were right, make sure you include that we were early too.
Well, okay? I'll say, so, how about
that
this?
Was a big part of the story.
How about we were finally right?
Okay. All right. That might work.
Yeah. I mean, we're not really stop clock people here. I mean, that's not what it's about. Where if you say like the market's going to go up, the market's going to go up, and eventually you're going to be right. We weren't just saying the market was going down. We were saying, giving specific fact-based analysis and reasons why this was eventually going to happen. And nothing that's happened has proven our underlying reasoning incorrect, right?
Oh no, you know, it's playing out the way it has to play out. But I'm just saying that if you take credit for being right, you have to acknowledge if you were way too early.
Oh yeah, we were.
You know, that's because we've been saying a lot of the same things for 3 years now.
Longer than that, but
people who listened at the very beginning passed up some serious profits as the bubble expanded beyond any kind of rational level.
Very true.
So, you know, we have to acknowledge both sides of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We were totally wrong for the past 10 years because we thought it was all going to go to hell in 08 and 09 and you in 06 and when you wrote your book even earlier than that. So, but, you know, it wasn't so much the timing of it as the reasons why, our case for what was wrong. And that was just completely ignored by the powers that be. So I don't take pleasure or pride in saying we're finally right. It's just that they're running out of rabbits to pull out of the hat. Hey, be a part of the show. Just write us. John and I will answer all your questions. We'll take some questions of yours next week. I've been saving them up. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. And if you are watching us on YouTube, then please subscribe, like, and share. If you're listening to us any place on the planet, just share the show. I think it's really important at this particular moment that you get alternative views and alternative perceptions of where the world finds itself now. Hey, as always, the Twitter feed, although I don't know how much longer I'm going to bother with that, at Kerry Lutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we will catch you next week.
See you, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.